Hello everybody, we're back at it again with a new episode. Great news for some people, great news, wonderful news. We're here to preview some games and talk about FPL as well. So without further ado, welcome to the latest episode of Back on the Podcast. So Josh, see how excited I am. Hope you're excited as I am as well.
I mean, I know that you're ecstatic because the Dutch guy has gone Coman. You said great news, though. You know what? I think it's actually great news for Coman as well because he's going to be paid £10 million, I believe. So I think it's good news for him as well.
No problem. He can take his £10 million and leave my club. There's no problem.
I mean, which club would just hire me? Let me flop and let them give me £10 million to pay me off. Like, God.
God, man.
you know, it's funny because that's how I look at some boxers where you see like a boxing bout is $500 million and the loser is taking $100 million. I'm like, Omo, just come and beat me and let me take the money and go.
After ruining the club, man, if you ever manage my club for me, man, I will attack you when I see you. That one, sure.
No, but I mean, the little football knowledge I have, I think I would have done better than Koeman, honestly.
I won't even argue about that. Like, everyone would do better. Everyone would do better, I tell you.
Okay, so since we're already on Koeman, we might as well just continue. So, he got the sack after the loss to Rayo Vallecano, the first time Barcelona losing to Rayo since 2002. So, records are meant to be broken, but Coman just broke all the wrong records.
Exactly. You know what's funny? That's a very day. A friend, because we have this group chat. So, in the group chat, he sent the record and said, Barcelona has not lost to Rayo Vallecano since 2002. Then it was not like the next thing was challenge accepted. That was Koeman.
Falcao rolling back the years, though. It was nice to see Falcao scoring, though not for you, of course.
You know, it was funny. I knew Falcao would score. When Barcelona faced a good striker, not necessarily like top tier striker, someone that that has IQ and PK is at the back line, definitely that striker will have it.
Are you saying PK doesn't have IQ?
Well, you can read in between the lines. That is just what I'm saying.
I think Pique has become your best center forward in the last 1 month, but arguably your worst defender. Although Garcia has something to say about that, the worst defender.
Of course.
But I think it was quite funny because reports coming out of Spain say that Koeman was sacked. Like, after the match. Like, usually clubs sack managers, like, in the morning, like, board meeting, maybe 10 a.m. or whatever time they have their meetings. And usually, it's morning, but this time was in the night, just after the match. I believe they were still on their flight back to Barcelona.
Exactly. I think I read the same report as you. Because I was they sacked this guy on the plane. On the plane.
Yeah. But you know what's interesting here?
Yeah? Yeah,
I think that shows that the club board were not even serious because this man has been doing a very bad job for months, or you could even stretch it back to say a year now, and they waited until he lost to Rayo. So are you telling me if Memphis had scored that goal, if it had been a draw, would they have sacked him? We don't know. If they had won, because Des just has a habit of wasting glorious chances these days. One at the Clasico, one against Rayo. So if they had won the game, they wouldn't have sacked him. And winning the game would still not have meant much to this club.
The truth is, I agree with you. Like, these are decisions where sometimes I question the thought process on this. It was clear and obvious from I think 2 months now that they are going to sack this guy. And still, they allowed him. And what is funny is, the position Barcelona is now, it's more difficult now for the next manager that will take over in terms of getting them back into the Champions League positions in the league and even making them qualify for the next round of the Champions League, because now it's difficult. Man, I don't understand why they do this. At the end of the day, they knew they were going to sack him, and now they allowed Barcelona to even drift further away from their competitor. So it's crazy.
Exactly, I agree with you. They wasted time, and you know the strange thing about it was, we were told about 6 weeks ago when like he was really coming under pressure that they would have sacked him, but it's because they have to give him a payout. So if the money was not available 6 weeks ago, 5 weeks ago, how come the money was available the night that they lost to Rayo? So it makes it sound like the board were still hoping that Koeman would actually turn things around.
I can't lie to you. Like Laporta didn't cover himself in glory. I think he has the wrong people advising him. And
is anyone even advising him? Because if people are advising him, the things he says in the press, I'm sure they would have told him to stop a long time ago.
Man, it's very hard not to agree with what you're saying, but it's actually crazy. Sometimes, like even right now as we speak, I'm seeing some of the things he's saying in the press conference. Well, I hope he's saying I hope he's saying the right thing for everybody's sake.
Now let's forget about saying the right thing. Let's talk about doing the right thing. Which is the manager to replace Koeman. Now we have defenses on it. Obviously, I'm not a Barcelona fan, so maybe I don't understand the sentiment of everything involved. But Xavi being considered as the front runner right now as we speak. Why Xavi? Why? I mean, he has done a good job in what country are they? UAE or Qatar or where?
Yeah, Qatar, El Sadd. The club is coaching is El Sadd.
Yeah. I wanted to say the country because the club, I really don't care about the club. El Sadd. Yeah. I think I found out about the name of the club just a few days ago that the club is El Sadd, but I forgot the country. So why Xavi? Why not? I look at, as a football fan, I look at Ten Hag and I'm like, wow, this guy is doing wonders with Ajax. Why not Ten Hag? Why Xavi? I know you explained it to me before we came on air. So can you just tell the listeners, why is Xavi the man for the job apparently?
Okay, so obviously, like you said, like we had this conversation. Ten Hag suits Barca like it's like a glove. He plays the Croatian football Barcelona are dying for. I've been screaming out for since Luis Enrique left. He plays that style. And one of the reasons why Barcelona's downfall is this obvious is because Barcelona drifted away from that style. They didn't continue building and innovating that style of football. They drifted and
I think they actually started drifting under Enrique, if you ask me, because it was the MSN. Yes. And I think even though they were successful under Enrique, I think they had already drifted.
Yeah, Enrique knew that the midfield wasn't it. So he bypassed the midfield by using the MSN. So just play the ball to Messi, Neymar, Suarez quickly, and we hit them on the break. That was really how MSN became. But now, to just answer your question, why not Ten Hag? The thing is, honestly, you know my thought on this. I really want Ten Hag to come because he's already proven. We've seen what he has done with Ajax, and we've seen how he has been able to promote young players, and even when I think Ajax sold six of their key players that actually beat Real Madrid and went to the semi-finals, I think two seasons ago in the Champions League. So they sold like up to six, and right now they are not even missing any of them. They are still playing that beautiful, attractive football. We have the likes of Ryan Gravenberg and some other key players.
Anthony for me is just
exactly Anthony. I didn't even know Anthony was Brazilian because the name doesn't sound Brazilian to me. So, moving on. The thing is, Barcelona went for Ten Hag. Ten Hag ruled himself out of the job. He didn't want to come at mid-season. He feels like there won't be enough room to work and instill what he's trying to do. So, he felt it was like... That's why, if you look at Barcelona, I think that was the thought process in their decision-making. Let's leave Koeman. Now to the end of the season, they get someone like Ten Hag. They didn't only just went for Ten Hag. They went for Marcelo Gallardo. Marcelo Gallardo coached River Plate. He has been successful with River Plate for quite a while. I don't understand the connection, but they went for Gallardo as well. Gallardo as well said he has a season he rejected. And these are from reliable journalists. They are all online. Fabrizio all these guys, they can confirm all of all this news I'm saying. So, and Gallardo's season ends in December. So I think Barcelona were looking at, oh, let's keep this guy to December. But wait, the thing,
Gallardo doesn't want to come now.
Yes, he doesn't want to come.
But not that he doesn't want to come at all.
Yes, yeah, yeah. He doesn't want to come now because he has a season with Argentina. And Argentina, their league season ends December. So why not just...
I know it sounds dumb, but why not just wait? And I think Gallardo is an experienced coach over there. Though Europe and South America are probably two different things, but why not just wait? Why put Xavi under such pressure? Because he's now going to be, because the way I look at it is, I told you this off air. I think that the next Barcelona coach is doomed to fail. Like, it doesn't even mean that, I don't say that Xavi himself will fail. I think that whoever it is, because there are so many problems. There are aging players, likes of Pique, Alaba, Busquets, players that shouldn't even be at the club. People like Luke de Jong, Dembele injury prone. Probably, I think Barcelona should cut their losses with him. You have Aguero, old and injury prone, entry ticking both unwanted boxes. So I'm like, are they not just setting up Xavi to fail?
Yeah, you know, I agree with you. Like, whoever takes that job has so many things working against the person already. So that's why I told you, either Xavi becomes really successful with Barcelona or he fails terribly. That's it. There's no middle ground for Xavi. It's not like some other managers where, like you see Ole steadying the ship. Either Xavi comes in and becomes really successful or he's doomed to fail. Well,
steadying the ship phase, I think they've just overflogged it for Ole, because the ship was really not that, like, there was really not much of a storm. They were successful reasonably under Mourinho, they won trophies. And so the only ship he had to steady was the bad energy Mourinho had with the board and some of the players, especially Luke Shaw. So the moment you remove that bad energy, I can't say that you've steadied the ship, because the club itself were not performing. The players themselves were not performing poorly.
You know, obviously, we'll talk about Ole. Ole will have his own turn. I mean, the thing is, like you said it well. Xavi coming in, there are so many things working against him. Yes, some people will tell you inexperience, but the things to me that is working against him is the entire cloud surrounding Barcelona, financial situations, like you said, aging players, and every other thing. So many things are working against him. But the thing is, what I would just say is, let's just be optimistic. Like, if he fails, no problem. At least Barcelona has tried. They've tried something different, because Barcelona is already failing under Koeman, and they needed to try something different. And the thing is, Barcelona can't afford to wait, because we all know that by December, the season might just be over for them. By December, Barcelona might be sitting 12th and like have like 20-something points to cover the ground against those in top four. So, you know, these are things that Barcelona consider, and they look like, oh, let's try and give someone something different. And I just think, I even said this to someone yesterday, if Xavi coming in, if they don't give Xavi the full power that they gave Guardiola back in 2008, where Guardiola came in, he was able to clear out those aging players. And those players, some of them were even at the top of their game, their prime. Deco, Ronaldinho, all these other guys. Eto as well, Samuel Eto, who is my GOAT, one of my GOATs. So if you don't give this guy the full power to actually do what he wants, to be able to clear out those players and start afresh with a clean slate, man, I think Xavi will fail because
you know the funny thing is, these players are talking about clearing out. They are Xavi's friends and former teammates, Pique, Alba, Busquets. He's not going to clear them out. He's going to take them as probably his lieutenants, like an army general. So he's going to actually entrust a lot of responsibility on them. He's not going to ship them out. And I'm wondering, if you don't ship them out, what way long term is the club heading to? The last thing, I know I might sound cynical now, but it seems to me like at least every one in two Barcelona managers must be a former player. Are there no good coaches that have not played for the club? Like, why must it be Xavi, former player, Enrique, former player, Guardiola, former player. Like, why does he have to be a former player?
What I'll just say is this is the way it is under Bartomeu.
Koeman actually as well.
Yeah, that's what I want to say. Under Bartomeu, Bartomeu looks at all those people that played for Barcelona to try and implement them into Barcelona. Like, yo, you've played for Barcelona, so you understand the cultural values and the style of play. Let me just say this. Like, he doesn't look at your previous success to actually give you the job. To actually feel that, okay, yes, you actually have the DNA. Because one of the reasons why Barcelona struggle is that they are so far from everything that they believe in. They are so far from it. And when you are so far from everything that you believe in, like, and you're trying to do something entirely different, this side is pulling away from this side. This side is pulling away from this side. Obviously, you'll be nowhere because you'll be lost. And that's the position Barcelona find themselves in. So for Barcelona to become one of the good clubs again, they need to go back to what they started and innovate those things that they started back in the 90s. And those are the things that brought them the success in the early 2000s and even till now. Go ahead.
Okay, so the only thing I have to say is, this is obviously with a bit of jest, but I'm wondering, if all the former Barcelona players say they don't want to go into coaching, like they just want to be football analysts or just watch football in peace and quiet in their homes without even having a job in the sport, so does that mean Barcelona Football Club will close down because no former players to coach you guys? I wonder. So that's that. But this weekend against Alaves, I know we say this about a lot of clubs, or we've said it about a lot of Barcelona's opponents recently, but this is a game Barcelona should be winning, with or without a head coach. And I feel like now the players will be a bit relieved. I think there's a bounce that a new coach gives you, that you have like 3-4 matches, the players play well under him, whether he's a good coach or not. Then after the fourth match, you now start finding out whether he's actually a good coach. But I think that even just getting rid of the toxic atmosphere under Koeman, I think that Barcelona should win this even without a coach.
What I'll just tell you is I'm so happy. That's why I don't really care about who wants to. Like, obviously, Barcelona announced yesterday the interim manager, Sergi Bagwan. Sergi Bagwan, obviously, he has been doing terrible in the Barça B. He has been doing so terrible in Barça B, so they just promoted him.
He wants to do terribly with the first team. Junior's move.
That's the problem, but there's no person that they can promote because they said Xavi will be coming next week. So they just needed someone to just close the gap for the next two to three games.
Alaves are yet to join the league this season. Maybe they correct it this weekend. 3 wins, 7 losses. Maybe they get that first draw.
No, I just think Barcelona will win that game. I just think Barcelona will win that game. And to me, one of the reasons why I'm happy was because some of these players can now express themselves. Because I don't know if you remember, when managers have been staying, and now they become detrimental to some players. Like, you see some players that went from like having a world-class season to players now being good players, and now they're not dropped to like mediocre players, and now they become so average and very, very poor. That's the kind of player Frankie went on to be. Now we've seen it with someone like Pedri. Like, so many of the players that looked promising. Like, even the one that was shocking when somebody pointed it out to me. Me and you were even on this podcast when you were telling me about Gavi. I was telling you, yeah, he's a promising kid. But if you see Gavi in the last two games under Koeman, Gavi was shocking. Shocking. Like, shocking. So to me, that's why I even feel Barcelona had to pull the trigger. Because it's just the same thing I remember. That's why I didn't like Sarri at Chelsea. Like, Sarri went from N'Golo Kante went from being the best CDM in the world. Then Sarri made him so useless. And N'Golo Kante now became injury prone. And all of a sudden, N'Golo Kante looks so average.
You know this thing? There's a myth about Kante. Kante was never... When people think of Kante, people think of, oh, Kante runs around and wins the ball. And so Kante is going to be the perfect defensive midfielder. Well, yes and no. Kante always played his best football in a midfield too. So you had Drinkwater and Kante, and currently you have Kante and Jorginho, Kante and Kovacic right now. So Kante was never going to be that one in a midfield three. So that was the problem was not that. So and then people were saying, why did you move Kante to central midfield when he should be playing as a DM? But Kante as the only DM doesn't really help the cause because that's not his game. And I think maybe because he can dribble, that's why Sarri put him there. So at the end of the day, I'll say it was wrong to put him there because playing 4-3-3, you might have just put 1-10 in front of two holding. But the way he structured his
but like you get the point I'm trying to make. Like some
way he set up midfield three, Kante was bound to fail either as the one holding or one of the central midfielders. So he was bound to fail in that setup.
Yeah, so like the truth is sometimes coaches become cancer to the club. They don't just affect the results, but they affect the performance. Like of,
Koeman was not cancer to Barcelona.
Oh my god! I won't wish him on my enemy. As you see that we banter Manchester United, Arsenal on this podcast. I won't wish Koeman to take over those two clubs. That's how terrible Koeman is. Like, you know
just so fans of those clubs don't think that we're anti Man U or Arsenal. We're waiting for Liverpool and Chelsea and Madrid and Bayern and all the other big clubs to start faltering, but unfortunately we can't banter Liverpool while they're smashing teams. So
but we can banter Real Madrid today. We'll banter them today.
Yeah, of course. That's where I was heading to next.
Okay.
See, this team reminds me of last season, yeah? And okay. If you ask me, if I was the president of La Liga, I would keep back the trophy. Nobody deserved it last season. Because for the last 5 weeks, or even 6 weeks of the season, like last five or six matches, you had the teams dropping points for fun. Today, Madrid will lose. Then you think Barcelona are going to take advantage, but no, Barcelona will just draw. Then you now say, okay, those two teams have dropped points. Okay, let's see what Atletico are going to do. What will Atletico do? Atletico will draw too. Then the next week, Madrid will win. Then you know that Barcelona, you know that, okay, Madrid have won. No, you guys have to win. But no. They will draw. Then Atletico, Madrid have won. You guys have to win. They will lose. So like that was just the story for the last 6 weeks. And it looks like we're heading that way again this season.
Yeah, I get what you mean. I get what you mean. Like, you know, I've said it already on this podcast. Like, the best league to watch after the... I know they will say Premier League is number one, but no problem. But the best league to watch is just the Serie A. Like, I love watching Serie A. There are more enjoyable games, more competitive. There's more competitiveness in that league. Okay, but so, La Liga, you can clearly see that La Liga is suffering from quality. Like, they don't have some quality players anymore. And the entire league is struggling. Especially when, if the top teams are struggling, it's going to funnel down to the bottom. That's what people don't understand. If the top teams don't have that quality, that structure around them, because it's a pyramid. If the pyramid at the top is not functioning well, it will affect the bottom. So that's like, we can even clearly see it when it comes to Champions League games, that they are far from it. When you watch the other teams, like even Inter, we saw when Inter played Real Madrid. Real Madrid just escaped that game, but you saw the quality Inter had. So it's clear as day when it comes to Champions League game.
I wanted to ask a question, but I've already answered it. I wanted to ask, is it that the small teams are getting better or the big teams are just becoming bad? And you've already answered the question, which is the big teams are becoming bad. So now we saw Atletico as well draw, not just Real Madrid. Atletico drew 2-2. When you thought they've taken the lead and they're going to win, no, they decided to concede a needless penalty and in the 98th minute. So yeah, they drew as well. Real Sociedad, should we start taking them seriously? Currently sit at the top.
the thing is, you see all this, the league table, especially in La Liga. I don't even take the league table seriously until January, because all these other teams, They just have first 11. They don't really have that depth that all those other teams have, like Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atleti. So when it comes to when the cup games kick on, that's the Copa del Rey, when you now have to start rotating and all of that, those other teams capitalize because they actually have that strength in depth. So I would say, yes, we can start taking them seriously now, but I don't think they will be there when it really matters, because they just have good first 11. They don't have that quality in their bench.
Okay, we'll see. Fun fact about Barcelona. Barcelona have actually not had a poor season. They've had an average season. Exactly 15 points from an available 30. So, that's half. And I think the glass is half full. What did you say? It's not half.
the whichever way you look at the glass is to, you need to pour more water in the glass. Let me ask you just before we go on. So there are some key games here in La Liga. Valencia, Villarreal, who do you think will win this weekend?
Villarreal. I think Villarreal have more about them. I think the structure under Unai Emery, we see them defensively sound to an extent. And then you have players like Gerard Moreno up front who can be deadly.
But Villarreal, they managed to draw against a poor Cadiz side. Cadiz were winning that game. They just got robbed at the end. So you think Villarreal will win? Fair enough, man. Fair enough. What about Real Sociedad?
It's about Valencia.
Okay.
I've stopped trusting Valencia like years ago, because although they currently sit just 1 point ahead of Villarreal, but Villarreal have that game in hand over them. I just look at it and I'm like, apart from Carlos Soler, there's nobody that excites me in that Valencia team. And maybe I should be looking at the team as a whole, but I want to see players that excite me, and I don't know.
Okay. Real Madrid face Elche. I think that one is straight for Real Madrid should win. Atletico Madrid face Real Betis.
That's what we thought about this week.
Is that?
That's how we thought they would have beaten Osasuna as well, so we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know. But there are two key games as well. Atletico Madrid, Betis and Real Sociedad, who are the current leaders against Bilbao. What are you saying there? I see dropping of points. I'm licking my lips.
just pray for Barcelona to win first before you're happy that others drop points. Atletico Betis, I'll just say that Atletico will not lose. I don't have enough confidence to say that they will win, but Atletico will not lose. That's all I'll say about that game. And for the Sociedad, I think Sociedad look like they are serious about contending for the top four. So I think they will just edge Bilbao.
Of course. Once again, you've come with this, your half-baked answers. No problem. Let's move on.
I said Sociedad would win, didn't I?
No. The Athletic, what did you say?
I said they will not lose.
They will not lose. I don't understand what that means. I don't even understand.
They will not lose. Ask the winner now. Do you want me to speak French?
Of course. Let's move on. You know what you are doing.
Okay. Well, I see the way that you didn't even give your own predictions that I gave, but no problem. We all know you're a chicken, so I won't say anything.
You didn't ask me, so let's move on. I can't ask myself, so let's move on.
I see. Well, when I ask you for predictions, sometimes I give my own prediction too. But okay. We just allow you. Just have that one. Just have that one. We're going to other leagues. Don't worry. You predict today whether you like it or not. So okay. Over to the Serie A. We had midweek fixtures as well. Inter Milan 2-0. Victory over Empoli, no surprises there. Inter had third, but they trailed the top two teams, Napoli and Milan, by 7 points each. And I'm just looking at Napoli, I mean, yet again, another banging victory, 3-0 over Bologna, though two penalties, Lorenzo Insigne. But I guess that's good for him because he has missed a few penalties recently, so at least he's back to scoring penalties. Napoli, I look at the team and I'm like, wow, defensively very sound, up front very good. But what happens if And I hope it doesn't happen. But what happens if Osimhen gets injured? Do they have enough?
That's that. You know, I've said this to you. They just have a good first 11. That's why I still think Inter are their favourites, because Inter have a very strong bench as well. So
they are 7 points behind.
Yes. See. You know. It just takes two injuries in Napoli. For example, you mentioned Osimhen. What happens if Osimhen and Insigne get injured? Who will come in and fill in those holes?
I think you can say that about most clubs, though. If your two best strikers get injured.
Yes, but if your two best strikers get injured, yes, obviously you have your first choice. But if the bench should be at least average, but Napoli's bench is not looking average in my eye. It's not looking average in my eye. So the thing is, I'll just say this. How Napoli, they just need to be very, very lucky with injuries. That's what I would say for them to actually win the title. Because Inter, to me, they have the best squad in the Serie A, and they can actually win this thing if they actually start hitting form.
I won't argue with you. I'm not excited by Napoli's squad depth, but I am excited about the way they've been playing recently. So we hope they stay injury free. And now Milan, AC Milan, Giroud aging like fine wine with the only goal of the game against Torino. He hasn't been getting too many starts actually, but now he has, I think, 4 goals in 5 starts. Is it time that he's a regular fixture in the starting 11?
I think the way they're managing him, it's okay in my eyes, because AC Milan, they have so many games. They play mostly weekends and midweek. So they need that squad rotation. And I think so far they've been able to manage him well, because they're still in the European competitions, and they still have cup competitions to play as well. And they are still in the title race. So you need to have that balance and find that balance.
If you had to pick one, let's say this is Coppa Italia final, very important game, pick one of Giroud or Zlatan to start. Who starts?
Yeah. So this is the kind of prediction you're putting me.
No. It's not even payback for no. I'm not that petty.
No,
come on.
No. This is the trap you've been setting. No problem. I will do my own.
There's no wrong answer. It's just your opinion.
No problem. But I'll just go with Zlatan, because Zlatan is proven, and we all know what Zlatan is all about.
And Giroud is not proven. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Giroud is an unproven striker who doesn't know how to play.
That's not what I said. No, that's not what I said. I said Zlatan is proven. Doesn't mean Giroud is not proven.
No. If I ask you, why do you pick this person over this person, and you tell me because this one is proven, so indirectly it means the other one is not proven.
The Champions League won with Chelsea last season
doesn't count. All the FA Cups he won with Arsenal doesn't count.
Hold on. One can be more proven than the other. Let's just put it that way. Let's not. Let's not go out there. No, you're hearing things. I never said that. Please.
So this weekend, obviously, there are still games this weekend. But before we even go to this weekend, I forgot. How can I forget? The almighty Juventus. Let me look at this carefully. Is this losing to Napoli? No, it's not Napoli. Is it Milan? No, it's not Milan. Is it Roma? No, it's not even Roma. It's Sassuolo, ladies and gentlemen. Juventus lost to Sassuolo. Where is this club moving? Because the formation and in the Italian media, they are tearing the coach apart. They are destroying him, Massimiliano Allegri, because of the way he plays his football. They say he's very, very stale, very old. He's not ready to move forward. They are saying that football has moved past when he was coach, and he should move with the times and play good football. What do you think?
Man, I think that's very unfair. Ronaldo left, which is one of...
How is he unfair?
Let me land, yeah? Ronaldo left, which Ronaldo was one of their key players, scored a huge percentage of their goals. So he left, Massimiliano came in, and Ronaldo didn't even leave at a good time. He left when the season had already started. So there was no way to even bring a replacement. So now they now have to structure the team where they have to bring in goals from different areas. If you actually watch Juventus, they've structured the team that the team now has a good balance to what they are trying to do. But the problem is they can't score goals. That's just the problem. They just can't score goals. They don't have a good goal scorer. You cannot be relying on Morata, who is a belly dancer and king, in my opinion. You can't rely on players like that. So at the end of the day, he has done the best with what he can work with. It's just the same thing with Xavi coming into Barcelona. The squad is not good enough. Let's be real. Like, how old is Chiellini? Chiellini, is he 72 years old or what? Like, some of all these players, like, let's be real. For him to even be in the position that he's in,
he can play Delete. He chooses to bench him most of the time.
Delete has been injury prone these days. So they're trying to work him into the team gradually. And when Delete is fully fit, he starts for Juventus. That's just the truth. He starts for Juventus. If you look at some other key positions, what is his name? Cuadrado. Cuadrado is so mid these days. Look at Dybala. Dybala hasn't. They said Ronaldo was blocking Dybala's shine. Oh yeah, Dybala shine now. Nobody's blocking your shine. You can't still shine. So like you see all these players. Look at Morata. Morata has been midi. No club wants him. From Real Madrid to Chelsea from Chelsea to Atletico. You know, nobody wants him. He just ended up in Juventus. Like
yes. So according to you, the coach is doing everything he can. Yes.
Yes, that's why I see it. If he has better players, look at the same point
as Barcelona, 15 points. So
okay. Have you seen this guy play? McKenzie. Have you seen McKenzie play, the American?
Weston McKennie. Yeah. I've seen him play.
Okay, McKennie, sorry. I won't wish him on any club. That's just what I'll just say. I won't wish him on any club.
You know where I think that the Italian media have a point? Yeah?
Yeah.
You're playing 4-4-2 of the Stone Ages. Like, who plays 4-4-2 anymore? And if you want to play 4-4-2, you might as well just play with the correct people. Now, please explain to me. Maybe my football knowledge is not good enough. But please explain to me how Adrian Rabiot is a left winger.
That's what I'm saying. He doesn't have the players.
What do you mean? No. I'm not even buying that. Because this team, you might as well just play a 4-3-3. Because you have Chiesa, Dybala. I'm talking about just this last match against Sassuolo. You had Chiesa, Dybala and Morata on the pitch. Why couldn't you have played Dybala left, Dybala right, cutting into his left foot, Chiesa left, Morata down the middle. Then you have Locatelli, Rabiot, defensive midfield, then McKennie in front of them. But you have this exact... That's what I would have done with these players. But no, he chose to play Chiesa on the right wing of the midfield four and Rabiot on the left. So tell me why they should not criticize him.
Well, I see what you're saying. So he's not helping his case. Let me just leave it at that. He's not helping his case.
So, I mean, I was like, Rabiot that cannot dribble anybody. Rabiot that is slow. Rabiot that cannot cross. I'm getting angry as I'm thinking of this team because I was like, I watched a bit of the game and I got irritated and I changed it because I was like, Rabiot on the left wing. Ah, God. It's finished. even if all the wingers are injured, I'd rather play the left back on the left wing and play a center back as left back than to play Rabiot as my left-sided midfielder. It is just shameful to see.
This is personal for me. Like, you don't like this Rabiot guy.
No. Like I said, I won't. It's not like I will bench Rabiot, but just play him in his proper position. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. I get what you mean. Let's look at some of their fixtures. If you have them on screen.
Yeah. So this weekend we have Atalanta Lazio, very tough game. I think it could go either way, but it's not for me to predict. It's for the Octopus himself, Leonard. Let's hear it.
I knew this was coming. You see that you're shameless, very, very shameless. No problem. What I would say is, look at how they set me up. Well, it's good. It's all calm. I think Atlanta should win this, but the thing is, Atlanta conceded a lot of goals, so I expect this to be high scoring. But I think Atlanta edges this because they are home.
Okay, so you heard Leonard, guys. You said you should set your school fees money on it and your house rent.
I didn't say that, Atlanta though.
Atlanta are definitely going to beat Lazio. That's what he said.
That's not what I said, though. No. Look at you're hearing different things.
Then, so we have Roma hosting AC Milan. So what do we say, sir?
I don't know how Roma is going to approach this, but to be interesting to see.
That's why you're predicting. You have to know.
I'll give Mourinho the benefit of the doubt and say he will come out of this with a draw. But obviously, AC Milan has better quality, so I won't be surprised if AC Milan wins.
So, someone that wants to bet now this weekend, what was your advice to him?
No, this is not a betting podcast. This is not a betting podcast. They should go and listen to
betting. But this is, we have people that bet that listen to the podcast, so we might as well help them if we can.
That's what I'm saying. They should go and listen to a betting podcast. This part of that podcast.
So you're chasing away our listeners. Is that what you're doing?
I didn't say that. This is a football
podcast.
No,
you're telling them to go and listen to it. Can you just imagine? You're telling them to go away and go and listen to a betting podcast that you don't want them again.
No.
Because you're too cheap to predict just one match. Why are you twisting
my words?
That's what you said.
No, this is not what I said. You're twisting my words. That's not what I said.
Okay. That's not what you said. We'll leave it at that. Now, Bayern Munich. I think I need to apologize to Bayern fans because I think I jinxed them. We talked about them scoring in 84 matches in a row. It was actually 85. You know the thing? My memory, I don't even understand because I saw that start on Friday, yeah? And obviously, they played at the weekend. So, common sense should have told me that it's now 84 plus 1, 85 straight matches. But when I came on the podcast, I still mentioned the 84 that I saw on Friday before the weekend's fixture. So, I don't know, Sha. All I'll say is that was a mistake. And 85 straight matches that they scored in, and it's over because Borussia Mönchengladbach tore them to shreds in the DFB Pokal. This is second year in a row that they are losing at the second round stage after going out to a lower division side last season.
I don't even know where to begin with, but I'll just say that when I saw it, I was like, wow, man, Bayern didn't use their normal team. And when I checked, I was like,
Geez. Yeah. That's what I thought too. But guess what?
They used their full strength, the full firepower. They used their nuclear arsenal and everything. And they're still like, the only out I'll give them is their manager has COVID. So he was not in the dugout to actually coach them.
Of course. So he was not with them on the training ground too throughout the week.
Yeah, he had COVID. So let's leave it at that.
Yeah, he was not on the training ground, and then the assistant too was not on the training ground. Nobody could coach them. Nobody could say anything. Of course, you know, the funniest thing about this game was what Thomas Muller said after the. Muller said that he cannot explain it. Like he has never been in this situation in his career, where his team loses so heavily. So he said he cannot explain it.
Don't worry. So maybe. Gerard Piqué.
He should call
Gerard Piqué. Gerard Piqué has been hammered like that countlessly. So,
and this is Bayern's biggest defeat. This is the first time they are losing by 5 or more goals since 1978. I mean, since you mentioned Piqué, let me just say something about Barcelona that I forgot to say earlier. obviously, you know it's not good because I'm laughing already. This is Barcelona's worst start to a season since 1987-88 season. So, yes.
May God help us. So, who did Bayern face?
Bayern are facing Union Berlin this weekend. And I just feel sorry for them because we know the anger that they are going to receive from Bayern.
I feel sorry for them. I even feel sorry for Barcelona when they meet Bayern in the Champions League as well.
Is it next week?
No. December.
Okay. No. There's still time. If it was next week, I would have just said it's over. That Xavi should not even take the job before that match. So let's go to the Premier League now. Okay. Before the Premier League, we saw some League Cup fixtures this week. We had Chelsea edging Southampton only just on penalties. Kepa proving his worth yet again.
Chelsea, they made it difficult for themselves, but in the end, they went through. So that's good for them.
Yeah, and then we saw Man City for the first time. I'm not even joking. No. This is Man City's first loss in the League Cup for 5 years and one day. Man City had not lost in the League Cup. I don't even understand how that is possible. They had won 4 straight League Cup titles, but now they're out on penalties to West Ham.
That's the thing. They left it too late. They played very well, but they left it too late. And at the end of the day, it boiled down to luck. We all know that penalty shootouts, you need luck on your side, and they didn't have that luck. And looking at it, like, they've started that competition for a while, and for them to leave it, like, I feel sorry for the City fans, but obviously Guardiola now will prioritize the other cup, which is the FA Cup. So we see how they approach that.
I don't see why you're feeling sorry for the City fans. This is not like Champions League final or something. This is just the League Cup. Obviously, you want your team to win the League Cup rather than not win it. But at the end of the day, it's not really a big deal to me. And I think a lot of football fans don't see it as a big deal either. But West Ham doing a lot of teams a favor, because I'm sure City was the one team that everybody was scared of. And now West Ham have eliminated them. So, a potential winner of the competition now. Arsenal. They won it.
What? What did I hear?
Why you... I don't like this disrespect. Why did you shout when I said potential winner? Why can't Arsenal not win the cup? Tell me why.
No. Sorry.
Did they not beat the Chelsea that everyone thought would beat them under Lampard in the final 2020 FA Cup?
No, sorry. I was hearing things. I was hearing things in my head. On that same
Arteta, I think the disrespect you give Arteta is just.
No, I didn't say anything. I don't know what you're coming at.
I'm going to say it again, and I expect a proper response now. So we're going to talk about potential winners of the EFL Cup: Arsenal beating Leeds. You're still laughing.
Okay, no problem. The big leads. Congratulations to them. Obviously, they are playing well. They are in good form. They are in good form. And we'll see how far they can go in the competition.
Yeah, the draws for the next round take place on Saturday morning, 10:30 a.m. UK time. So, before the Premier League fixture start this weekend, we'll know the teams who they square off against in the Cup. Before we go to the weekend's Premier League games, IFAB, that's the International Football Association Board, they are talking about making the 5 substitutes a permanent rule, because obviously we know it was temporary when the COVID-19 pandemic hit the world in May 2020 when football returned. They said, or just before football returned in June, they said in May that they will allow 5 substitutions because players will be tired and everything. And it carried over to the next season. And now they're thinking of making it permanent. What's your opinion on this? Because Premier League managers are divided. Some want it, some don't want it.
Obviously, it favors the big teams because they can actually go and bring in players because they have that strength in depth. But what I'll just say is...
You see this, it favors the big team thing I keep hearing. Eh? When some people... I feel like some people will hear 5 and think, oh my God, that's a big number. But that's just 2 more than the 3. So it's not like we're jumping from 1 to 5.
But no. I'm not even saying like it favors, like, for example, like City now. Imagine them bringing 5 from the bench. 5. You know that those and when
but,
any.
But you know what I think? Yeah, I think it stabilizes teams as well. Because we've seen teams that they are playing well and maybe they are losing. So they are looking for a goal. So instead of bringing on just the usual 2 or 3 substitutes, the coach brings on 5, and then now the game is disjointed. There's no rhythm again. So sometimes you're doing the substitutions to your own detriment.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But me, in my own opinion, like, if the 5-pin should come, I like it because it actually gives room for managers to, especially all those unfortunate situations where you've made your substitutions and players are injured and players, you know, you can easily sub out one of the people that you subbed in that just got injured. So it actually gives managers freedom. That's managers that actually use their brain. Because some managers are just throwing five, and people like Kuma can do those kind of nonsense. So managers that use their brain will really exploit and use that to their advantage.
Yeah, I think that a lot of coaches just make subs for subs sake, which is unfortunate to see. But you know what? I'm actually done because I don't see it as an advantage to the big teams. I'm like, everybody has five. They are not telling the big teams to make five and you small teams make three. They're saying everybody has five. So if you want quality, you might as well go and get quality because at the end of the day, everyone has the same rule. And I find it very, very, quite frankly, irritating that all other major leagues in Europe have five substitutions and England just feel that they are special. And so they have three. Like, it's just so annoying to see. If every league goes with three, I'm fine with it. But if other leagues are going with five, then the Premier League should fall in line.
What's funny is that Premier League, they can go with five, but they chose not to. That's what is funny. Because they didn't exclude them.
Exactly.
From that.
But now that it can be a permanent tool, I think they'll be forced to adapt to it.
Yeah. If IFAB confirms it and it's permanent, they will be forced to.
Okay, so now, Leicester and Arsenal face off this weekend. Two top six hopefuls or rivals. I'm not sure you're going to laugh about that because realistically Arsenal could finish in the top six.
I think this is one of Jamie Vardy's favorite opponents. I think he has 11 goals. He has scored more than any other. He has scored more against Arsenal than any other team. So this is and I think Jamie Vardy will be licking his lips for this one. But the thing is, Arsenal, they've been able to keep clean sheets. They are conceding less goals. I think they have faults in terms of expected goals or something. So I think it will be an interesting match. To me, I expect goals. Arsenal beat Leicester twice away from home last season, 2-1 in the EFL Cup and 3-1 in the Premier League. So I think Bernard Rodgers coming into this should try and analyze what happened in the previous meeting so that he can actually come and upset. If Leicester are really serious in terms of challenging and if Brendan Rodgers is really serious in terms of furthering his career going into better teams, he needs to be winning games like this.
I look at this game and it's very tough to call, but I think the midfield will be whoever wins the midfield battle, I think will win this game because Tielemans is in top form. Maddison, we saw him scoring as well in like last week. So, and I'm wondering, is Partey alone going to stop them? So that's the only worry I have for us now, or that's the major worry I have for us now, because that's not the only worry. Vardy's another worry. But if they can keep Tielemans quiet in the middle of the park, then I think Arsenal will get a good result. So another game this weekend. Chelsea away at St. James's Park, Newcastle, are they going to get their first win under the new owners?
No. This is a very, very straightforward game. Chelsea coming at back of winning Norwich 7. So we should expect 7 goals in this one, but we should expect Chelsea to come through with the 3 points because Chelsea, I've said it already, Chelsea are real title contenders and they are still even contenders in Europe as well. So since the start of last season, Newcastle have conceded more home goals, 43, against any other side. So Newcastle have conceded 43 goals at home since the start of last season. So that shows you how bad their defense actually is. And I think Kai Havertz, Mason Mount, and even seen Ben Chilwell as well, but they'll be licking their lips for this one.
I mean, my ears were playing tricks on me. I thought you said own goals, but when I heard 43, I was like, there's no way they've considered 43 own goals. They had to be home, so that would have been some stats. 43 own goals in one season.
Oh my God.
Any club that has that, they should just close down the club and let them just know that it's not existing anymore.
Unless you have defenders, like you have like four Maguires at your back line, then something like that can happen.
Four Maguires don't even cut it. Maybe two Maguires, one Eric Garcia, and who is worse than them?
Who is a terrible goalkeeper these days? You now have Ben Leno in the defense.
Leno is even still decent. I think Chesney of this season. Yeah. Chesney of this
season. Oh my God. Chesney. The former
of this season. UK.
He formerly played for Arsenal, so.
Why do you have to call Arsenal when I said it's terrible? I don't like this thing you keep doing. Why do you?
I don't understand. Did he not play for Arsenal? Yes.
When he was in form and I wanted to talk about Chesney, obviously not on this podcast, but you will never tell me the former Arsenal keeper is not doing well. Why did I say when he's terrible now? You're telling me.
I don't understand. Arsenal. I'm pointing out something so that our listeners we know where he came from. That's how it is.
You know what? Arsenal fans are going to just find where you live and beat you up. That's what you want.
Oh, no problem.
So we have Liverpool and Man City at home. Liverpool to Brighton, Man City to Crystal Palace. Straight wins for both of them, right?
Well, Liverpool, they should win this one. Brighton, they are looking secure at the back. So they are very, very solid this season. But Liverpool, they should win this one. I think people look at it like straightforward for Liverpool. But Brighton, they've been very, very good this season. There's a reason why they are at the top half of the table. So it's not just they didn't get them by just mere luck. This guy has been doing very well, Graham Potter. So I think Liverpool, if they are serious about this game, they might be in for a very, very long battle with Brighton. Then for Manchester City, this will be Guardiola's 200th Premier League game in charge of City. And his record is quite good. So his record is 146 wins, 25 draws, and 28 losses.
Wow.
What a record.
I mean, best manager in the world for me. I'll keep saying it. I don't care that he lost the Champions League final. I don't care that he hasn't won all the league titles since he came to England. He's the best manager in the world. And that record just backs up my point.
Exactly. And I expect him to extend his win record against Crystal Palace. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We have the battle of the managers who are clueless at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Nuno and Ole fighting out.
I just thought they would say this joke I saw. Yeah. El Sax. How did they say El Saxico?
El Saxico.
I don't know how they said it, but man, this is the battle of
the battle of who gets sacked next, because Coman has won the race. At least he won something. though to be fair, he won the Copa del Rey last season, so he won two things.
What I would just say is Barcelona, they've left the banter club FC.
No, they've not left. We have to see them get results under Xavi or whoever else is the new manager.
No. For now. If Xavi starts doing bad, they will go back to it. But for now,
they are still there. They are still there because their last match was a loss to Rayo.
No. Like, what I mean is the trinity of mediocrity. That triangle. Barcelona has left.
It's not going to be hard for Xavi to fall into the trinity.
Yeah, he can still fall back into it, but for now, Ole is there alone. Swimming.
You know what? This Man United situation is very worrying for me, because the board wanted to sack him. By all indications, they were done with him. Like, you know, the funny thing is, they were not thinking of sacking him before the Liverpool game. But the manner of the defeat made them think like, no, this guy has to go. But guess who saved his job? Alex Ferguson. Sir Alex Ferguson. I have to add sir.
Surprise, surprise. And Man U fans will tell us Ferguson doesn't it doesn't make the decisions at the club.
So that, you know what? I was coming to that. That's why I said it. Now, does Ferguson have too much power at United? Because I think he does. The owners are scared of him. The board members are scared of him. Even the current coach, Solskjaer, still calls Ferguson the boss. So, how does a coach still call his former coach the boss and you think that he has a mind of his own?
The thing is, because of the years as Alex Ferguson served at United, so they consult him and his advice.
Can they not move on? It's just like this messy situation where for 2 months they kept talking about him, Coman and Laporta. Can't you move on? Ferguson was great, yes, but you can ask. I think there's one thing between with you ask him for advice, yeah, and he says sack this manager, don't sack this manager. And then there's another thing where you take his word as law. How can Ferguson choose who? As in, he's still bossing my head today.
That's what the club,
and he said Moyes should take over. Why?
That's what I'm saying. Like, his advice and his opinion holds so much weight. I can't understand it.
I can't even call it advice again. I think it's law. He's giving laws. It's no more advice.
Oh my God, man.
Because advice can be taken or not be taken.
The truth is, Man United, they're not serious. When they are serious, they know what to do. That's just the truth. When they are serious, they know what to do.
Somebody told me something, and it might sound cynical, but what if Ferguson is telling them to hire bad managers and telling them to keep Ole, that is obviously not a good coach, so that his record would be like he's the only good manager of Man United in his lifetime? Then maybe when he dies, maybe 20 years from now, then Man U can move forward. But for now, he wants to be the only good Man U coach.
No, I don't think that's...
A former Man U coach.
We saw the way he stomped off when he was watching the Liverpool game.
I mean, have you seen actors? Actors do that. He might have been taking acting lessons.
Oh, my God. So, Frankie is not acting.
No one knows what he does in his spare time. We only see him in the stadium. No one knows what he does.
If I was the one doing this, you start doing too much. When I talk about Arsenal, you start doing too much. Now look at the way you've carried this Man United center.
I'm not even done. I'm not done because it's a shambles. You had Ole going to the training ground this week, and I'm thinking if you're Ole now, so you had Sir Alex Ferguson going to the training ground, and I think that undermines the coach. Because he's not going to the training ground after the team has won like 6 matches in a row or unbeaten in 10 matches, where it's a good atmosphere. So you're just going to, hey, continue the good work, boys. You're going when they have lost a very big game. Almost like saying, oh, this baby coach doesn't know what to do. So let me go to the training ground and tell the players what to actually do. So is he showing support or is he undermining Solskjaer by going to the training ground?
Honestly, I don't even know. Like, I'm trying to even understand why he went there. Some people are seeing he went there to pick up his suit or something. I don't even know.
I was even coming to that. So is the training ground now? Is Ole sewing suit? Is Kari sewing suit?
I don't know. They've turned.
Is Bruno Fernandes okay now? Because he's no more taking penalties now. He has started sewing suit.
I don't know what to tell you. Maybe Man United, they've left business of winning trophies. So it's, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you, bro.
I mean, they should just come up with something believable, please. Maybe he should have taken a picture in the suit or held the suit like, oh, how players hold jerseys and say, this is the suit I came to wear. Since they are treating us like we don't have sense, this is the suit I came to collect.
Why not, fans? Listen to him because I've washed my hands from this. I'm not involved.
No, because I don't understand. Like, if you love the club, let them sack this Ole and let the club move forward. It's as simple as that.
Ah, well, as a neutral, we all love Ole at the job. Ole should remain at the wheel. He has been doing, he has steadied the ship. He has been doing well. So, long may he continue.
Of course. May we just see terrible things.
Amen. So, back to the Tottenham game. Yeah, Tottenham have lost more Premier League games against Manchester United than any other opponent. And that is 36. So, looking at this, like I said this to you, Manchester United will win Tottenham. They'll win Atlanta. and Ole will remain. It's a never ending cycle. When Ole is back, his job is at risk, he ends up getting this streak and he wins games and everything goes back to normal. So
you know the funny thing. The funny thing is, I actually think the same thing as you. I think they will beat Spurs this weekend. I think they will get the result against Atlanta, though I'm not sure if they will win, maybe a draw, but I don't see them losing that game. And then Ole stays in the job, whatever happens against City, as long as they don't get battered as well. Maybe they lose 2-0 or 2-1 to City. Everyone keeps going like everything is well. Marcus Rashford just said something that blew my mind. You see players, they should ask for advice or they should do IQ test before you allow players to open social media handle. Because I don't understand how you lost a game on Sunday, then you come out a few days later to say that you are embarrassed, like you are still embarrassed days after. So what? We should be clapping for you that you're still embarrassed. He's embarrassed. We feel bad for him. Then he also said that the players need to redeem themselves. Why are you coming out to say you need to redeem yourselves? Why don't you just shut up and go and actually redeem yourselves on the pitch?
You know, we've talked about this. Social media is now the new...
I don't get it.
Apology letters, tattoos, and different things now. So this one is nothing new.
Can someone just explain to me? Sorry, maybe you can help me. What is the point of coming out and tweeting or posting on Instagram that you people want to redeem yourselves on Sunday? Why are you coming out to tell us that you want to? Obviously, you want to redeem yourself. So why are you telling us? Why don't you wait and win the match? Then you now come out and say, we wanted to redeem ourselves and we're happy that we've started the journey to it. That makes more sense than coming to say you want to redeem yourselves. Now, imagine if they lose. What is he going to say?
No. He will still come out again and type another thing for them.
I'm already pissed off and I'm not even a United fan. So I can imagine how they feel.
It's the new normality. Like, it's just what is happening. People just come out, start tweeting, apologize.
Before I just threw my phone on the floor out of anger, of which there's no money to buy a new phone right now. So let's just go to FPL, please. Let Rashford continue redeeming himself on Twitter and Instagram.
Okay, for our favorite moments. So FPL. So we all know how last weekend went for, I don't know how it went for you, but for me, it was terrible. I didn't structure my team well, but all the less, I think I can.
Captain Salah, captain the Egyptian king.
I didn't listen, so my fault at the end of the day.
Fun fact, Salah has now been added to the curriculum of Egyptian schools. So students are going to be studying Mo Salah. Like, Salah is now his subject.
Wow. That's crazy.
Like, you need to study. The guy is not human anymore. Like, they need to study him.
Okay, cool. Because that means Messi and Ronaldo, they will have subjects, courses, everything. Okay.
Why can't you just have Salah?
Why are you always twisting what I'm saying?
Why did you have to bring Messi and Ronaldo into it? I don't see this thing you can do.
Oh, my God. I didn't say anything. Okay. Let's go back to the FPL now. So, looking at it, I think some people are having doubts on did they actually bring in the right Chelsea defenders for those that have Rudiger and Azpilicueta. So, what do you think people should do? Because now, right now, we see people like Ben Chilwell and Reece James scoring high points.
Buy Chilwell straight as that, because now we're sure that Chilwell is now the starting left back for the Premier League, because Alonso started the League Cup game, although Chilwell came on in the second half. But for Alonso to start that game, it means Chilwell is going to start this weekend in the Premier League. I mean, we can almost bet anything on it. So Chilwell is now his share to lose, basically. So unless Chilwell gives a disastrous performance against Newcastle, he will start not just Newcastle, but the next Premier League match as well.
Okay.
Although I remember, but that's not a concern for this weekend, that's a concern for next weekend. I remember when Tuchel just came in the job in January, I believe, they faced Burnley and he started Alonso. And after the match, he said one of the reasons he started Alonso was because of his height to defend set pieces. And Chelsea faced Burnley next week after Newcastle. So Alonso has not grown shorter since January. So he still has that same height that he talked about then. So you might see Alonso next week. But for this weekend against Newcastle, we're going to see Chilwell.
Okay, fair enough. I think before we go further, I think there are some things we need to clear. So there are some players that have been flagged. So if you have any information on them, like Jamie Vardy, Rafinha, Bueno, some other injured players that have been flagged, do you have any information so that we can know if they will be actually be fit to play?
Okay, so Jamie Vardy has been cleared that he's expected to start. He's expected to start, but obviously the only person that is going to decide is Brendan Rodgers. So he's no more ruled out through injury. It's now a case of whether Rodgers starts him or not. And Rafinha is expected to be fit as well. That's what Bielsa himself said, that he expects Rafinha to be ready for this game, because he was speaking ahead of their League Cup tie with Arsenal. He said that he expected them to miss the game against Arsenal. That's Rafinha and I've forgotten the other player, but Rafinha would miss that game and be available for this weekend. So he has missed that game and he will be available for this weekend. So as for Mbeumo is a bit tricky, because so far then I almost said Daniel Farka. So far Thomas Frank has been keeping his updates close to his chest. He hasn't said much about Mbeumo, but we know that he picked up a knock and we're yet to get confirmation on whether he'll be fit. But I just think if you have Mbeumo on your team, you can start him. And if he doesn't play, then you get subbed off automatically. But if you don't have Mbeumo, you shouldn't be buying him now. But if you have him, you start him. And then if he doesn't play, someone comes on.
All right, cool. That's fair. Okay, then there's this argument going on. How do people try and bring in Trent right now? Because we're all seeing the potential Trent have in terms of attack, and even right now he has still keeping clean sheets.
How you try and bring in Trent? First of all, if you have an expensive defender like maybe a Ruben Dias, maybe you sell that defender to buy Trent. Or if you have one of the underperforming premium strikers like Ronaldo, who you should have sold ages ago, or Lukaku because he's injured as well, or even Kane. I mean, all these guys are underperforming. So if you have one of those guys, you sell them. You can buy an Ivan Toney or a Mikel Antonio, and then you get the extra funds you need for your defense. And the same thing goes in midfield. If you have Bruno, then you sell him and you save funds, and then shift it to defense and get Arnold.
Okay. What about people that still have Luke Shaw? I know some people still have Luke Shaw. What do you say to them?
How would you still have Luke Shaw in game week 9 that just passed, game week 10 approaching? United have kept only one clean sheet in the last 6 months. One. And you are having a United defender. What are you using him to do?
So should we like leave Luke Shaw, or should they sell Luke Shaw right
him,
now?
Tell him. You should have sold him years ago.
Okay, cool. Okay, now, so there's this debate going on around now. Who should you bring in terms of midfield options? So the perfect comparison is Mason Mount and Phil Foden. So if you had to pick one, who should be your first choice in the team?
Oh my God, you know, I had this choice to make last week because I wanted to do a transfer and I had to pick between Foden and Mount. I ended up picking Foden because Foden is playing as a false nine, more or less, for Man City. And we know what that means. That means chances will actually fall to him, a lot of chances. Mount, on the other hand, there's no striker now for Chelsea. Maybe you can say Havertz is the striker for now. But Mount hardly scores. I know it sounds weird because he scored a hat-trick last week, but before that, he hadn't scored in, I think, 22 matches or so, or 25 matches, I think. He hadn't scored in before last weekend. So Mount is not someone that guarantees goals. Mount just, I think he takes corners. That's a good thing about Mount. So you could get an assist from there. But other than that, he doesn't really create much. So I'd rather have Foden.
Okay. Okay. I think I've covered that.
Mount probably scores a brace this weekend, and that's just my luck.
You're probably right. I think we've covered most of the things. So let me just cover some other talking points. What are the points we should be bringing in? Some people are trying to bring in Kai Havertz to bridge the gap so that they can get rid of him when Lukaku comes in. So what are the points we should be looking at to get, even if it's for just two game weeks?
Yeah. Havertz is a good example because you have Newcastle for Chelsea this weekend and Burnley. So, and playing as the nine, he will have chances in these two games, and you expect him to score at least one goal in these two games. So I would say Kai Havertz is a good option. Also, Mason Mount is a good option. He's still lowly owned to an extent. I'm looking for a City midfielder other than Foden, and I struggle to say one because we've not seen the best of Sterling this season. Bernardo Silva plays very well, but he hardly scores. So I don't know if you should be looking at too many City midfielders, but I'll say Kai Havertz is a very good one to go for. And if not that he was injured this weekend, I'd have said Armando Broja on loan from Chelsea at Southampton is also, because he has even scored in his last two appearances. Unfortunately, he won't play this weekend against Watford, but I think Wang as well for Wolves is looking like a good player. He has scored 4 goals in the Premier League this season, but just from, I think, 5 shots, so he's probably scoring too much with just few shots and already 4 goals. So maybe he can't continue at that rate, but for now, it looks like a good option as well.
Okay, you mentioned the Bohan guy. So a lot of people have hamstring in their team. So how do you, like, because right now I'm hearing hamstring is third choice, fourth choice. So how should they be looking to replace him, or who should they be looking to replace hamstring with?
Hamstring in Southampton, yeah?
Yes, hamstring, yeah.
If you have hamstring, I think you leave him because Broja is not going to start this weekend, and so he's going to start and he's playing against Watford. So Watford don't have the greatest defense in the world. So I say you give him one more chance. You play him against Watford.
Okay. Okay, cool. It's just crazy that now some people are... because there's one more talking points, because some people have so many injuries and some players that they don't know if they will actually play, like Armstrong and like even Duffy and all those other guys. So, like, is it
Duffy,
time...
Duffy, for me, I think it's time to sell him, because especially if you got him at 4 million. Now it's 4.4, so you can sell him at 4.2. So you've made 0.2 million in FPL. I think you sell him because now that the main guys are back fit, I don't think he'll be starting too many games.
I think he has dropped to 4.3. Because I still have him in my team, and I'm looking to save the transfer for better positions. But what I just want to add is, some people are talking about using their free hits now to navigate through the injuries and through players that are not starting. Because some people have Kane, Lukaku, Ronaldo, all these other guys that are not really firing now. So they are looking to just take this, bridge the gap with their free hits for this game week. Then next week, things look better for them. Is this something that you recommend, or you expect you feel? Because to me, I feel like it's better to use your free hit later on down the line, but for weeks where you have just like 3 players starting in a single game week.
Yeah. You know, I agree with you that it's better to do that, to leave it for when you actually really need it. But who knows how bad their team has been hit? Because one person can have Lukaku, Ronaldo, Kane, Who else? Duffy, Tierney, like Ben White. Like, you could just have like 7 flagged players or players that are in poor form at once. And so such a person has to use his free hit. But other than that, I think if you have just 2 or 3 players flagged and you have enough on your bench, I think you just brave it out for this week and you move on.
All right. All right. Cool. I think one of the most transferred in players this week was Mo Salah. A lot of managers brought in Salah to their team.
Who does not have Salah? Like, you're playing FPL, you don't have Salah.
Some people don't have him, bro. Like, I'm surprised. He's
owned by 69% of managers. So, the remaining 31%, what are they doing?
Some people are sentimental. Like, you've told me this thing before. Like, an Everton fan that doesn't like Salah in their...
He's actually one of the top managers in the world. And he has never put Salah or any Liverpool player in his team ever. And he's one of the top managers in the world.
It would be interesting to see how you navigate
that. Yeah, there's one of my friends that listens to this podcast, like every episode he listens to it. So when he hears me say this, he'll know he's the one I'm talking about. He is a United fan and he told me he had never bought Salah in all his years of FPL. He never bought any Liverpool player. But guess what? He bought Salah last week before they played against his Man United. And Salah scored the hat-trick against his club. So I'm sure he was thinking, yes, my FPL Salah trick, but no, my club in real life destroyed. So yeah, shout out to you, bro.
Cool, shout out to him. So let's talk about captaincy pick. So who should we be bringing? I know you say it's clear and obvious again, but I don't want that kind of answer.
I'm going to sound like a broken record every week because there's only one option. There's only one man. There's only one player in Premier League that is now part of a school curriculum. In fact, the entire country's curriculum in schools, there's only one man, and his name is Mohamed Salah, and that's all I'm going to say.
Okay, so is there not any other one that we can be looking at if we don't want to go for Salah?
Why would you? Oh God! If you don't want to go for Salah, first of all, I recommend that you see a doctor to know what is wrong with you. But then, if you have a gut feeling, because it's good to follow your gut at times, maybe your mind is telling you Salah will blank this weekend. If that's the case, then I think Foden is a good shout as for captaincy. I think Ivan Toney is a good shout. I think Kai Havertz or Mason Mount is a good shout. So those are a few other names for you.
Okay. What about Kai Havertz?
Yeah, I think I mentioned him now. I said Kai Havertz or Mason Mount.
All right. I didn't hear you. Apologies. All right, I think we've come to the end of the episode. My own closing words would be Barcelona have left the Banta FC title for Manchester United fans, so you guys should enjoy. And so, Josh, any closing words?
Yeah. My closing words are don't deceive yourself. Your last game was a loss to Rayo, so you're still in that Banta very cool, and until you get wins, you're still the same with United, bro.
Okay, no problem. We'll come back to this next week. So enjoy your week, and it's goodbye for now. Peace.